This episode of The Benefit Whisper is brought to you by Root 3 Insurance and Financial Services, where smarter benefits begin. If you're tired of rising healthcare costs and opaque insurance contracts, Root 3 is here to help you take control. They specialize in transparent, employer-driven benefits strategies that protect your people and your bottom line. Ready to break away from the status quo? Visit www.fixmybenefitsnow.com and discover how Root 3 can help you build a plan that actually works for your team and for your budget. Kimberly, thanks for joining me. I want to start by saying that healthcare talks a lot about outcomes, statistics, and cost control, but sometimes those statistics come at the expense of real people and real families. We know that every minute in America, a new family is bankrupted due to medical bills. So today's conversation starts with a very personal story, and it ends with something that every employer should understand about oversight, transparency, and blind trust in the healthcare system. So Kimberly, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being patient.
So before we get into the employer side, you recently shared something very personal on LinkedIn. Do you want to tell us the story?
Sure. So this kind of began my advocacy in healthcare. When my husband and I got married, and we were married 5 years, and we were pregnant with our son at the time. And my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic bladder cancer. When they diagnose you with stage 4 metastatic bladder cancer, they basically tell you you have a death sentence. That's what one doctor friend told us, just to be blunt, and I appreciated that. Since he had stage 4 cancer, I thought, the young, naive self I was, that I would call all these hospitals that say, we cure cancer, because you see all that on the commercials. And so I called all of the very well-known hospitals. When I told them his diagnosis, they would not take him. And so we found a hospital in our own hometown that we became a name and not a number. And they performed the surgery on Steve, and they told us, you're pulling a Hail Mary, and we're not saying this is going to work, but we will do this for you. 19 years later, my son is in college, graduated college. My husband was able to be the football coach, the soccer coach, the walking down the father-son football walk. And he's been able to be really present in his life. But during that journey, there were doctors that told us, I will never forget sitting in a room and a doctor looking at me and saying, he's got a good 2 years. And that did not resonate with me well. And so that doctor was fired. And I found one that was on our side, because you do not have to accept what one person says. Go and you get second opinions and you advocate for yourself, because it is so important. And it was so important in my case because my husband survived.
Wow. Wow. That's very powerful. You're absolutely right. And I've, as you know, some of my past, I've done a lot of advocating for, you know, friends and family and relatives. You know, it's important. One of the things we share is the passion for why we're in this, which is hugely important. And I'm so glad that you found somebody. What made you sort of question, you know, instead of just trusting the doctors, what made you question, like, hey, it doesn't sound right?
It came too quick. It came too quick to say, there's nothing else we're going to do about this. And then they tried to accuse me of being harsh on him for wanting to chemo him use the highest chemo and wanting to make him allow him to survive. They said that I was, you know, why would you do this to his body? Why would you put him through this? He is going to die. And I knew right then, this is not someone on my team. You are not a team member of mine. So you need to go, and I need to find someone that's on my team. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's great for you. I'm so happy that you did. And now you do that and other things for other people, which is amazing. So let me just pause. So what you described, it wasn't a personal failure. It was a system that made decisions based on statistics, right? Is that pretty much it?
Absolutely. The bigger systems we would have been a statistic they didn't want. They want survival statistics. They do not want death statistics in cancer. So once I told them the stage, the grade, the everything that from the reporting, they said, no, we cannot take him. He doesn't have a chance.
I think it gives us a very important message because you said a lot of them just wouldn't take them. So we do sometimes confuse reputation with outcomes, don't we, Kimberly?
We do. We do. The system is optimized for process, not people.
Yeah.
And so it's a process and it's a grading system and it's a statistical system. And that's what builds them to be the best system, where it's not always the most patient-friendly system.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm glad that you fought and that you're continuing to fight. You're doing some amazing things. So let's shift over to employers. Kimberly. So for employers listening, this part actually, I mean, everything here really matters, but this is something that more people might realize. So the same healthcare system that makes decisions about care is also managing employer health plans, processing claims, applying contracts, et cetera. So let's talk a little bit more about that, because number one, not only does it make statistical decisions, it made spending decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And most employers assumed that if a claim gets paid, it must have been handled correctly. So, Kimberly, why is that a bad assumption?
That is a bad assumption because no one's looking over your claims. They are adjudicating claims. They are sending them off to be paid. And no one is checking and balancing what is actually on that claim. You've got so many different departments and hospitals that are throwing codes onto a bill and not checking. The system changes so many times, billing systems, and they are incentivized for revenue to be up, not down. So no one is going to overlook your claims. And they're going to be paid because you're handcuffed into a contract that won't allow you to review them if you do try to review them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're overpaying every single time. I've been in this business for a long time. I've reviewed claims and I have found one clean claim. And Ralph, when I say one clean claim, that claim had an acetaminophen charge on it that was $5, and that is clean to me. Every other claim has had mistakes on it.
Yeah, every claim.
Every claim.
And you must be talking hundreds, if not thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Every state. Yeah. That's a large amount.
Yeah.
It's a large amount of spend, overspend.
Right. Yeah, it is. And I've had, you know, a lot of people that you know on here, Chris Deacon, Marilyn Bartlett, Julie Slesnick, and a lot of them talk about, and David Scheinker, I'm not sure if you know him, but he and Kevin Schulman, did a study at Stanford about one of the things is the billing related insurance costs and the 43 steps that a bill goes through before it's paid. And these 43 steps, a lot of them are manual, they're handoff, they're PDFs, faxes, all kinds of things, rekeying. So it's not surprising. And a lot of what we call the BUCAs, they pride themselves on auto adjudication. There's no analytics.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes through.
Mm-hmm.
What kind, where do these kind of mistakes usually show up? Are they isolated? Are they patterns? What surprises employers about most of them?
There's probably five codes that I can tell you 99% of the time they show up on a claim and they're going to be ineligible. So there is a pattern there. If there's five codes every single time, I find those on every claim and they're ineligible. A lot of times it is the unbundling. When a claim is paid, it's paid off of a UB04, which is a summary of your stay.
Mm-hmm.
It does not break out the line by line. So when you break out that line by line, you realize that you paid for the surgery, but you also paid $80,000 for sterile equipment. Well, that sterile equipment goes within that surgery. Or so it's bundled in. It's part of the CPT code. So if you're paying for that surgery for $50,000. And they try to separate out certain things, like if it's an inpatient stay, nursing services, those go within your billed charges. They don't go separate out. They're integral to the procedure or the stay. So there's a lot of things that are separated out of unbundling, double billing. I posted the other day a repricing of charging the same lab five times within a five-hour ER visit. So I've seen where they've charged a father for being in the delivery room with his wife $28,000.
$28,000 for what?
Stand in the delivery room while his wife has a baby.
For standing there.
And no one would have known that had you not had someone looking over your claims, because they just run through a system and then a check is written.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's, unfortunately, it's not surprising, but that's not good. So, so these are usually on the UB, not the HICVA. So it's primarily the hospital charges.
It's primarily inpatient stays, surgeries, but it's typically, it's not the UB that you see it. It's more the itemized statement, and that's what they don't provide. No one ever gets the itemized statement. If you've got a large claim, you should always look over your itemized statement, because like if you're at a restaurant, Ralph, and you get a claim and you pay you by a credit card, and you know how you get that little receipt that tells you how much it was. Well, what all did you pay for?
Yeah.
In that little credit card receipt that you just signed, you want to know items. Did you pay for Wagyu beef, or did you pay for,
Right. Yeah.
So you want to know exactly what you paid for if you have a large bill, right?
Sure.
It only makes sense. It's only good business sense. So those are things that they're not allowed. I mean, they are not giving the BUCAs, are not reviewing. And then if the patient asks for them, they are not providing.
Right, right.
Not the patient's plan.
So if the patient asks for an itemized bill, they sometimes do not.
It's an act of Congress. It's an act of Congress. They make it so difficult. And it's not typically the patient, it's the plan, because the plan has every right to retrieve an itemized statement to review under ERISA, as we know.
Yeah.
But they make it they make it very difficult, to where I've gotten to where I will get on the phone with them and say, okay, I'm going to sit here and wait till the fax comes through. So let's just wait. And I make them wait on the phone with me until I see that fax come through.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's important. I mean, you talked about the restaurant. I've had times where I've ordered something and it doesn't come. And usually it's an honest mistake, but then I check the bill. Did they charge me for it?
Right.
And usually they're honest. They take it off, at the restaurants. But I always check. And why shouldn't we do the same in healthcare? Why should it be any
different?
Whatever
business runs this way, there's no other business that doesn't check before you pay.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I mean, imagine, and I use this example a lot. Imagine if you bought something on Amazon and you had to wait 3 to 6 months to find out how much it cost, and you had to go through 4 or 5 intermediaries.
Would you have bought that?
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't. That is just insane to me. It's just.
It is insane.
And nothing is enforced. Nothing is ever enforced. And that's what is difficult. And a lot of times those contracts, you are handcuffed to getting a lot of that information. In fact, it's gone so far to say you cannot contact our providers. They will not allow a plan to contact their providers, which I wasn't aware.
Yeah, I've seen those contracts.
Providers were owned by BUCAs and we could not contact them, but apparently that is in contracts.
Yeah. Let's spend a minute there, because I have looked at administrative services agreements, ASAs and MSAs, that say, and I wish I had the wording right in front of me. I've got it in my files. Basically, it says you, the employer, self-funded employer, we're spending your money, but you don't have any right to ask the providers what they charged or what they were paid. And if you want to know any of that, you have to go through us. And I read that and I said to the employer, did you see this part? Like it's clause 8.2 or something. I said, did you see this? And they looked, and of course, those things are so long, Kimberly. A lot of people it's kind of like when you're signing, yes, I agree to the terms of, you know, my iOS upgrade, they don't read it. But let's talk a little bit about what duty does an employer actually have? And they're going to just sign it. But employers kind of unknowingly expose themselves by assuming that everything is being handled correctly. Why isn't we trusted our broker, we trusted our TPA a good offense? And what really should prudent oversight look like?
Prudent oversight should be independent, hiring someone independent that is not tied to one person in your plan to help you review everything. And it feels like it's layers on top of layers on top of layers. Either you, and I say independent because even internally, Ralph, there are players that you can't trust internally in your own plan, right? I mean, there's dinners, there's games, there's boxes for NFL games. There's a lot of stuff that can be happening that you are not aware of. And I know this because I've spoke to very large plans that had no idea what was going on in their benefits division. So I think that independent, having someone independent with no ties to the pharmacy, to the kickbacks of anything, would be a good idea before you sign anything within to Avuka. On legal, I have reviewed a lot of documents, and the legal allows stuff to go through because they don't really, sometimes if you're not well-versed in healthcare, you do not know the little dynamics that can cause a lot of extra trouble. Problems.
Right.
So I think that it's really important to have someone that really knows the system that's in that you can trust. And it's hard to find those that you can trust sometimes. It's really hard to find those that don't have misaligned incentives or hidden agendas. And so educate yourself like I did with my husband. You educate yourself and you make sure, because you are the fiduciary. Absolutely states that in the contract, in the ASA, in the everything, it states you are the fiduciary. We are only the fiduciary of the money and nothing else.
Right.
So you are giving someone your bank account and saying, take care of it without anything. I don't have to look at it at all. You just take care of it and I trust you.
Wow. Yeah. You know, and of course, oversight, it's not mistrust. It's governance, right?
Right. Right. It is.
Yeah. So, Kimberly, if an employer out there is listening, wants to be more proactive about their health plan, where should they start? You know, for example, like what questions should they ask the TPA? How often should they look at claims? Should they ask for itemized? What's the one thing that employers should stop assuming?
They should control their data 100%. They should control their data, and they need to know every what everybody's being paid. It needs to be disclosed. Compensation disclosures and controlling your data.
Okay. Compensation disclosures and controlling your data. And I've heard that again and again from different guests. Hugely important. Hugely, hugely important. And sometimes, of course, the TPA claims that they own your data. They'll throw up all kinds of smoke screens and they'll say, well, the contracts are proprietary and trade secrets and all this kind of stuff. What would you say to that if an employer wants to get their data?
I would say if they own the data, then they need to be the fiduciary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you want to get your data, then it is your right to have your data in my eyes. Now, people will disagree with that. But whoever makes the gold makes the rules, or whoever produces the gold, that's what my dad used to always say to me I was younger, and it has stuck with me. But if you're paying the claims, it is your rules to me. And it's as simple as that. It's run like any other business. One other thing I want to say about contracts, too. When you do ask for the data, and they have these stipulations of, we need a mutually agreeable vendor. Have you heard those when they say you're trying to review claims and in your contract it states you agreed upon a mutually agreeable vendor? If they are a mutually agreeable vendor auditing your claims, they are not working for you. I do not believe in that, and I do not trust it. If they agree with the other with the BUCA or whomever, the PBM, right, whomever, if it's mutually agreeable, they have agreed to something with that BUCA.
Wow.
And I have known of money being, and I won't say I haven't been offered money after doing an audit and not wanting me to tell the results, only tell 10% of the results.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. It happens. So mutually agreeable, and make sure that those incentives, you do not have someone that's going to lose their integrity over your audit.
Yeah. Wow. It kind of sounds like, you know, the old kidnapping, you know, drop it off at this garbage can at such and such a time.
Right.
You know, like it, yeah, I mean, wow.
Or let me just dangle this carrot in front of you and see if you'll react. And maybe I'll get, you know, you won't go tell them how much we have overpaid in your plan.
Yeah, exactly. So, Kimberly, you founded US Beacon. Is that right?
It is correct. Well, actually, so my husband and I were 15% owners. My husband was with Merrill Lynch and he was senior vice president over several states. But when he got sick, he went out and he had invested small investments in companies. This company was a workers' comp, no technology, nothing. So once he went through what he went through, not only was it emotional for me, it became intentional and it became passion. And that's when I said, hey, Steve, I want you to buy 100% of the company and I want to start helping patients and plant, you know, people. So I'm a very big believer in doing people right. And I'm real black and white with that. And the way I was raised, it's the way my dad has been all his life. And I wanted to help people, especially at their most vulnerable moments, because I know what I went through. I would never want a family to go through that, especially in worry about financials.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I share the same passion, Kimberly, because I, unfortunately, you know, I talk to people every day that, not every day that are going through that, but all the time I have people, my claim was denied. I don't know why. I don't understand it. What can I do? Why is it this way? You know, stuff like that. And you and I have worked with one of my friends together, and I had help from you and Warris and, you know, other people. And it's really important. So what kind of work do you do at, like, what does US Beacon do?
So US Beacon, we do audits for plans on medical and pharmacy side. We do fiduciary oversight. We also are hooked in with a lot of direct contracted plans that we review their claims just to make sure that there's no overcharges. We work for a lot of workers' comp plans. We are a resource. And if you have a claim, I will have a broker reach out to me and say, hey, we've got this $5 million claim. We would like you to review it. That may be the only claim I get the entire year from that broker or that plan, but I do review it. And so we are a resource to use. There's no contract you have to sign with us, except for that if you use our findings, you know, we have to be compensated.
Sure.
Of course.
Right. Yeah,
but
of course.
Other than that, we are here as a resource to work, make the system sustainable for everyone. So my passion is to do exactly what Mark Cuban is doing, direct contracting with hospitals and eliminate the static.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm having Mark Cuban on the podcast. I'm taping it on March 24th with some of the people I mentioned from Stanford. We're going to talk about that a lot, about direct payment, direct contracting. It's hugely important because at the end of the day, the employer's money is being paid to the providers. The fact that there are all these middlemen in between each taking a piece out, you know, shouldn't be that way. I think we both agree on that.
I think Mark Cuban has got the biggest platform. I mean, I can post all I want about, you know, but nobody's going to be able to get it out there like someone like Mark Cuban. And my respect for him and my gratitude is so huge because he has really been a game changer in this arena.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was recently, you know, before we started, I was involved in something that's going on in Tennessee where the Department of Commerce and Insurance of Tennessee did an audit And they found, I had Benjamin Jolly on a while, you know, just earlier this week. They found where a PBM owns the actual pharmacies. And in this particular case, what happened is they paid one of the pharmacies that they owned 160,000% more than they paid a non-affiliated pharmacy. You know, so, and that drug, by the way, numbers, they paid their own pharmacy $9,000 in this particular case. They paid a non-affiliated pharmacy about 4 days apart, $57. And through Mark Cuban cost plus, it's $18.40 for the exact same drug.
How much better could you get to have your prices post, plus your markup, and know exactly what you're going to pay?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, the old story about going to a restaurant where the prices aren't on the menu, you know, if the prices aren't the menu, you probably can't afford it is usually
the
story.
Well, and too, I use the analogy. It's like when you go get your oil changed, you know that you're probably going to pay, you know, what, $80 to $100, I don't even know.
Right.
But then let's say you get a bill for $5,000 after you got your oil changed. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what hospitals can do. They want you to pay for the garage that your car set in order to change the oil. You know, that's how a hospital is. If you know the price you're getting, but then they tack on all this extra stuff. And I'm not saying it's intentional by a hospital. I think physicians 1,000% should be paid. They should be paid fairly.
Absolutely.
And they should be paid what's owed to them.
Yep.
It's the middle stuff. It's the spread pricing. It's the all the other static that goes on. So,
right. Yep. Exactly. So let's talk just before we end here. We've still got a little bit of time. Let's talk a little bit about transparency in the future. So one of the themes that we hear a word. It's a buzzword. It's become a buzzword all the time. Is transparency. It's hugely important. But let's talk about pricing transparency, contract transparency, and employers asking more questions. So do you think we're reaching a point where employers are really starting to demand more visibility into how their healthcare dollars are spent?
I think we are making noise. And I think there is a point where people are paying attention. They didn't realize this was going on because it's gotten so bad. And let's just say this, Ralph, each year premiums are going up for no reason that the employers can see. Things, vertical integration, people are, you know, so the noise is out there. It's the enforcement.
Right. Yeah. And you were saying that earlier.
It's never going to work.
Yep.
The lobbying dollars, all of that has got to cease. And we have got to run healthcare like a business. It has got to be run just like a business. You know your price, you know what you're paying. You go in, you get your procedure done, it's paid, and you're out.
Yep.
And there's no 5 months down the road, a collection agency that's sending you.
Yeah.
You know, statements.
I had a rotator cuff repair done a few years ago, and, you know, I paid in full. I got a statement in January. The surgery was in August, and in January, they said, okay, you're all paid, you're fully paid. The next month, you owe $500 and it was drastically overdue or just, you know, and I said, well, wait a second. How come last month I was paid up? Where did this come from? Well, you had a procedure that wasn't covered. And I said, oh, you're talking about the PRP therapy. The doctor told me about that. And I paid the $500 up front. Okay, then we'll adjust the bill. Didn't hear a thing for another month. And then they sent me a collection notice. And I said, well, wait a second. We cleared that up. Well, they now made something up. It's for something else. You know, rather like my credit score is 850. Rather than screw it up, I paid the $500. Eventually, I called the insurance company and they said the confusion was that I had paid twice and they showed it as owing instead of a credit. So they sent me to collections because I overpaid. Can you imagine that?
It's just unreal. It really is unreal. And think of the normal person that is not in healthcare to get those bills, even our seniors. I mean, think of it. It's hard to comprehend all that people don't know and don't know how to, and they reach out to me and don't know how to take care of this and don't know how to advocate because they don't understand the system. It's too hard to understand. And once you're in there and know, you know exactly the channels to take. But to me, back to your point of transparency, it's a word to me right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no acting on it whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. What do you think, Kimberly, still needs to change? Where do we need to go a little bit further?
I think that the plans should be able to run their plans. I think that there should be a fee, fixed fee, for a broker and a TPA, and that's it. And the plans, or direct contracting, which I'm really a proponent. I really love direct contracting with hospitals. But I think that until we start governing over these issues, that we can set as many laws as we want, but nothing's going to happen until we enforce them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot already that we can fall back on that, you know, we can just say, hey, look, it says right here, the speed limit is 65. How come this guy's going 95 and he hit somebody and nobody did anything? So the laws are there to refer to, but you're right. They're just not being enforced.
But then in your contract, you've signed that you won't give the data. So if you don't read those contracts, if you've signed something over on a legal document, you've allowed every bit of it to go straight to the person you don't want it to go to, you know, so you have got to make sure and that contract is you dot your I's and cross your T's in every single bit of it.
Right.
And they make them big in all 150 pages they give you. You've got to make sure you own it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hugely important. And you said that at the outset. And I think that alone it will make a huge difference. And, you know, Mark Cuban talks about standardized contracts and, you know, transparent contracts that are published, that are available to the public. And, you know, that's huge. And I told you earlier, we're going to talk with Kevin Schulman and David Shanker and Mark Cuban. We're going to have them together talking about direct contracting, direct payment, the life of a bill, all that kind of stuff, and contract transparency. So
wow. I cannot wait to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, though, forward to it. Ralph, at one point we tried to change a contract with a plan. I'd looked it over and the network said, well, if you don't like the way we do it, go find someone else. They would not change the contract. So we're beholden to these networks, and that's got to change.
It's got to change. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that's the key. Systems, they won't change on their own. What, you know, whether you're fighting for a life or protecting a health plan, advocacy is what creates accountability. So
exactly.
If people want to work with you or find you or, you know, see what you do, how can they reach you and follow your work and talk to you?
Sure. So I am on LinkedIn, Kimberly Carlson. Also, my website is us-beacon.com. You can get in touch with us. There's an information and you can email us immediately right there. I would love to speak with anyone about, I'm passionate about plans and helping self-funded plans.
Right. That's great. That's great. I love it. So, you know, Kimberly, thanks for finally being here. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that we've tried, you know, several times and stuff. So I'm glad that you were finally able to make it. I'm glad you're over your stomach flu. That can be terrible in itself. And it's good to see you out there fighting for people.
Let's
we'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Just being a decent human being, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Something we just don't see.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you.
There's an army of us, and you're one of them, so I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Well, thanks for being here, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Ralph.